Okay, so an inspector calls, right? It can be, I'll admit it, kind of a tough one to fully get sometimes.
Definitely, it throws you a lot.
But here's the thing, the characters, right? They're like a puzzle. Priestley, the guy who wrote the play, he made them that way on purpose.
He did.
And once you kind of, figure out how those pieces fit together, oh man, it just makes everything click.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you see what he's really saying.
I like to think about it, it's like he's handing us all these puzzle pieces. Each character is a piece. And as we put them together, we start to see this bigger picture emerge about social responsibility and how we treat each other, really.
It's like he's holding up this mirror, but like to society, not just, to one person, but to the whole thing. And he's showing us like the good stuff, but also the not so good stuff.
Yeah, he doesn't shy away from it.
The ugly stuff, exactly. But let's start, I guess, at the beginning. Eva Smith, she's kind of the heart of the play.
I mean, she kicks off the whole thing, right? I mean, if it wasn't for her, there wouldn't be a story.
And the inspector, he keeps saying like she could be anyone, There's a reason for that.
There is. It's not just a throwaway line.
Right.
It's really crucial to understanding what Priestley's doing.
It is.
So think about it. Eva, she's a young woman, working class in 1912.
Okay, yeah.
That alone makes her, I mean, incredibly vulnerable, back then.
Right.
I mean, think about it. There weren't the same laws to protect workers, especially women.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine trying to navigate, I mean,
I can't even
this
imagine.
world with limited rights, constant worry about money, it's tough.
It is. And Priestley, he wants us to really think about that, I think. He wants us to like try to get into her head to understand what it was like for her.
Absolutely.
And there's that line, right? The inspector says there are a lot of young girls living that sort of existence in every city and big town in the whole country, basically. It's like he's saying, this isn't just about Eva.
Exactly. He's connecting her story to a much bigger problem, a pattern. It's happening everywhere.
It's systemic.
That's the word. It's not just about one bad guy or one bad situation.
Right.
It's the system itself that's allowing this to happen again and again.
Yeah, and then we meet Mr. Burling, right?
Oh, Mr. Burling.
He's
He's not exactly the nicest man.
no, he is not Mr. Nice Guy, not at all.
Well, even close.
And he says that line, right, about lower cost and higher prices.
Yes, classic capitalist, right?
Yes.
And think about the time period too, right?
Yeah. Okay.
This is when socialist ideas they're bubbling up, they're challenging the old ways, the old power structures, and Burling, he represents that old guard,
Yeah.
that old way of thinking.
Like the I've got mine kind of.
Exactly. And Priestley, he's deliberately setting up this clash, right?
Yeah.
Between Burling and the inspector, between capitalism and socialism,
Yeah.
it's woven into the very fabric of the play.
So Burling's like all about the profit, no matter who gets hurt along the way.
Yeah, pretty much. Profit over people. That's his motto.
Yeah, and like the way he talks about his workers.
Ugh, I know, right?
It's like so cold.
It's chilling. He calls them several hundred young women, almost like they're interchangeable parts
Right.
or machines or
Yeah,
something.
they're not even people to him.
Exactly. He's dehumanizing them,
Yeah.
reducing them to just tools in his quest for wealth.
It throws.
It is. And that ties into this whole idea of economic exploitation, which, Priestley really wants us to think about.
So he's saying like, hey, be careful, because if we only care about money, then people are going to get hurt.
That's exactly it. He's issuing a warning. He's saying, look, this focus on profit above all else, it can create a society where people are easily exploited, where their lives and their well-being are seen as less important than the bottom line.
Okay. Now, what about Sheila? She seems, I don't know, nicer at first.
Sheila. Yeah, she's a tricky one.
But she's not totally innocent either, right?
No, she's not off the hook when it comes to exploitation. Not at all.
Okay.
She might not be a factory owner like Burling,
Yeah.
but she still uses her position, her social status, to hurt Eva.
Right. And that's important, right?
It is.
Because it shows that it's not just about money.
No, it's not. It's about power too,
Yeah.
and how people use it, sometimes in really subtle ways.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. Sheila gets Eva fired from her job just because she felt threatened.
Right, because she thought Eva was prettier or something.
Yeah, exactly. It's a classic case of abusing power, even if it doesn't seem as, I don't know, as overtly evil as some of the other stuff we see.
Right. So Priestley's saying that exploitation can be sneaky.
Yes, it can be wrapped up in these everyday interactions, these little power dynamics that we might not even notice.
Yeah.
He's challenging us to look at our own lives and see where we might be contributing to these imbalances, even if we don't realize it.
Wow. Okay. So we've got Eva, who's vulnerable,
Yes.
Mr. Burling, who's all about the money, and Sheila, who uses her social status to get what she wants.
And that brings us to Gerald.
Oh, yeah, Gerald, the wonderful fairy prince.
Ugh, that line.
It always bugged me a little bit. Like something wasn't right.
Well, you're right to feel that way. Priestley is being very deliberate with that phrase. He's using it to highlight the power dynamic between Gerald and Eva.
Okay.
He swoops in and rescues her, right? But it's all on his terms.
Right.
And when it's convenient for him, he dumps her.
So he's not really a hero.
No, not really.
It's more like he's playing the hero to
Exactly.
make himself feel good.
Yes. There's this underlying sense that he sees Eva as someone he can control, someone he can help, rather than an equal. He enjoys having that upper hand.
It's kind of messed up.
It is, and it reveals a different form of exploitation,
Okay.
one based on social standing and this assumption that he knows what's best for her.
So he's blinded by his privilege.
Exactly. And that prevents him from truly seeing Eva for who she is and understanding her situation.
Wow. Okay. So Mr. Burling, money, Sheila, social status, Gerald, this weird hero thing. Is there a pattern here?
There is. It all ties into how those in power can exploit those who are vulnerable, and often they don't even realize it.
That's kind of scary.
It is, and it's something Priestley really wanted to expose. He wanted people to see these patterns, to understand how exploitation works.
Okay, so where do we go from here? Who else do we need to talk about?
Well, I think it's time we talked about Eric. His story is really important for understanding the full scope of Priestley's message. He shows us the really tragic consequences of exploitation.
Oh, okay. Let's get into that. It's getting pretty intense.
It is, but it's important. Priestley didn't shy away from the tough stuff, and neither should we. Eric, right? He's a tough one to talk about.
Yeah, kind of a wild card.
He is, but he's essential to understanding what Priestley's getting at. Think about how he describes Eva, like pretty and a good sport. Those words are loaded.
Yeah, I always get a weird feeling when I read those lines, like it's not right.
Right. It's like he's not seeing her as a person. He's reducing her to these traits, like she's an object or
Yeah,
something.
it's dehumanizing.
Exactly. And that's a huge problem. Remember that this is the early 1900s. Women were fighting for basic rights, like the right to vote.
Right.
And Priestley is deliberately using Eric's behavior to show how ingrained those attitudes towards women were.
So Eric's objectifying Eva, but his actions go beyond just words, right?
Absolutely. His actions have real consequences, and they're a direct result of his privilege and sense of entitlement.
It's like he thinks he can do whatever he wants and get away with it.
Yeah, and that's a dangerous mindset. Remember that line from the inspector? Just used her for the end of a stupid drunken evening, as if she was an animal, a thing, not a person.
That line gives me chills every time.
It's a brutal indictment of Eric's behavior and the dehumanizing nature of exploitation.
It shows how even something that might seem casual, like a night out, can have devastating consequences.
Especially when it's fueled by alcohol and a lack of respect.
Yeah, Priestley's not letting anyone off the hook.
Nope. He's showing us how exploitation can take many forms, and we need to be aware of them all. So we've got Mr. Burling, the capitalist, right? Sheila abusing her social power, Gerald with his messed up hero complex, and now Eric showing the dangers of entitlement. It's like they each represent a different piece of this bigger problem.
It's like he's weaving a tapestry of exploitation, showing how all these threads connect.
Exactly. And we can't forget about Mrs. Burling.
Oh, Mrs. Burling. She's something else.
She is. She might not be directly involved in Eva's downfall at the start, but her actions are a masterclass in hypocrisy.
An abuse of power.
Oh, absolutely. Mm. She represents that rigid upper-class mentality that refuses to acknowledge its role in perpetuating inequality.
Like, she thinks she's better than everyone else.
Exactly. And she uses her position to reinforce those inequalities. Remember, she's a prominent member of the Brumley Women's Charity Organization.
Right. She's supposed to be helping people.
Exactly. She has the power to help those in need, but she chooses to deny Eva assistance.
And she blames Eva for her own misfortune. It's awful.
It is. And Priestley is using Mrs. Burling to expose the flaws within these institutions that claim to offer support.
It's like he's saying that even those who claim to be helping are part of the problem.
Exactly. Their refusal to help, their judgmental attitudes, it all underscores the play's themes of class division and social responsibility. He's showing us how those in power can perpetuate these systems of oppression, even when they claim to be acting in the best interests of others.
Okay, so let me get this straight. We've got Mr. Burling, the ruthless capitalist, Sheila, who uses her social status to hurt others, Gerald, playing the hero but actually exploiting Eva, Eric, whose entitlement leads to tragic consequences, and Mrs. Burling, who represents the hypocrisy of institutions. It's like each character is a piece of this puzzle.
You got it. And when we put all those pieces together, we get this stark image of a society that's deeply flawed. A society teetering on the brink of moral collapse.
Wow. It's a lot to take in.
It is. But that's where the inspector comes in.
Okay. The inspector. He's not just a detective.
No, he's more than that. He's like this catalyst. He forces the Burlings and the audience to confront our own roles in this whole mess.
To look in the mirror and see our own complicity.
Exactly. And that's what makes the play so powerful.
Okay. I think I'm starting to see the bigger picture here. But I gotta ask. Why is Priestley doing all this? What's the point of showing us all this darkness?
Well, remember, he was writing in the aftermath of two world wars.
Right.
He had seen firsthand the devastation that can happen when societies fail to address these issues.
So it's a warning.
Yeah, I think so. He's saying, hey, if we don't start taking responsibility for our actions and caring for those less fortunate, we're headed down a dangerous path.
A path we've already been down before.
Exactly. He's challenging us to break the cycle.
To learn from the past and create a better future.
Yes. And he believes in the power of collective action and social responsibility to make that happen. He wants to inspire his audiences to create a more just and equitable world.
Okay, I'm with him on that. But there's still one big piece of the puzzle we haven't talked about.
The ending.
Yeah, the ending. It's confusing.
It is. Priestley leaves us with a lot of unanswered questions.
Like, what was the point of it all? Was it all a dream?
Exactly. And that ambiguity is intentional.
Okay, but why?
Because he's not trying to give us easy answers. He wants us to grapple with the complexity of these issues and consider the potential for change. Remember that final phone call? The hint that the inspector might not have been real?
Yeah, it throws everything into question.
Right. It's like, does that make the Burlings' actions any less significant? Does it diminish what Eva went through?
That's a good question.
It is. And it adds this layer of moral ambiguity that makes the play even more thought-provoking.
Even if the inspector wasn't real in the traditional sense,
yeah,
the problems he brings up are very real.
Exactly. Eva's suffering was real, and the need for social change is real.
So it doesn't matter if there's a literal inspector coming to knock on your door.
Right.
What matters is how you live your life, how you treat others.
Precisely. And that's the ultimate challenge Priestley leaves us with.
Wow. Okay, I'm ready to tackle the ending now. But first, I think we need to talk about one more character.
Ooh, who's that?
The audience.
Ah, yes. The silent observer. The unseen participant. Priestley was a master of using the audience in his plays.
But how does that work? What's he trying to do with us?
That's a great question, and one we'll explore in the final part of our deep dive. Get ready to unpack how Priestley uses theatrical techniques to challenge our perceptions of guilt, innocence, and the consequences of our choices.
All right, so last time, right, we were talking about the audience.
Yeah, yeah, the audience.
As like a character.
A silent character, a very important silent character.
Yeah, so how does that actually work? Like, how did Priestley use the audience, you know, to make his point about exploitation and all that?
Well, I think one of the key things is the historical context. Remember, the play is set in 1912.
Right.
But Priestley wrote it in 1945.
Right, after the war.
Exactly. And that gap, that time between when it's set and when it was written, it's really important. He's deliberately creating this distance to make us, the audience, think about those years in between.
So he's like making a comment on the present, even though it's set in the past.
Exactly. It's like he's holding up a mirror to his own society, using this historical story to reflect on the problems of his time.
Well, that's clever.
And think about what happened between 1912 and 1945. Two world wars, a depression, the rise of fascism.
Yeah, a lot happened.
A lot. And Priestley had seen the consequences of those events, the devastation, the social upheaval. He'd seen what happens when we ignore inequality and responsibility.
So it's like a warning.
Absolutely. He's saying, hey, look, we've seen what happens when we don't learn from the past. We can't afford to make the same mistakes again.
Yeah, that makes sense. But how does the audience, like, fit into all of that?
Well, think about it. The audience in 1945, they're watching this play about 1912.
Yeah.
They know what happened in between. They've lived through those wars, that depression.
Right.
But the characters on stage, they don't. So there's this dramatic irony where we know more than the characters do. And that creates this tension, this anticipation.
Yeah, you're like waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Exactly. You're waiting to see how they'll react to the inspector's revelations, hoping they'll make different choices.
That they'll learn from history, basically.
Exactly. And that ties into Priestley's socialist beliefs.
Oh, okay.
He really believed in social responsibility, in people working together to create a better world.
So he's trying to inspire people to make a change.
Absolutely. He's not just pointing out the problems. He's offering a solution. He's saying, we can do better. We have to do better.
Okay, so we've got the historical context, the dramatic irony, and Priestley's message about social change. But then there's the ending, and that's where things get really weird.
The ending.
Right.
It throws everyone for a loop.
Yeah, it's so ambiguous. Just when you think you've got it all figured out, he pulls the rug out from under you.
Right. That phone call at the end, the suggestion that maybe the inspector wasn't real, it makes you question everything.
Yeah, like, was it all a dream? Did any of it even matter?
Exactly. And some people argue that that ambiguity weakens the play's message.
I can see that. Like, if it was all a hoax, then what was the point?
Right. But I think it actually does the opposite.
Okay.
It forces us to think even harder about what Priestley is trying to say. He's not giving us easy answers. He's making us work for it.
So he's making us think for ourselves.
Exactly. He's saying, even if there aren't immediate consequences, our actions still matter. We still have a responsibility to do the right thing.
Yeah. It's like, just because you don't get caught doesn't mean you're innocent.
Exactly. It's about personal responsibility, about examining your own conscience.
Even if there's no inspector coming to judge you.
Precisely. So even though the ending is ambiguous, the message is still clear.
Right. Our choices matter. We have to be accountable for them.
Exactly. And that's what makes An Inspector Calls such a powerful and enduring work of art. It stays with you. It makes you think. It challenges you to be a better person.
So what's the one thing someone should remember about An Inspector Calls? What's the key to really understanding it?
I think it's about understanding the characters, not just as individuals, but as representations of something bigger.
Like different parts of society.
Exactly. And it's about understanding the historical context, the social injustices that Priestley was trying to expose. And it's about engaging with the ambiguity, asking those tough questions, and wrestling with the answers.
That's good advice. So to everyone out there struggling with thinner, An Inspector Calls, keep at it, keep thinking, keep questioning, and you'll get there. And thanks for joining us on this deep dive. I think we all learned something today.